to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. This is our second hour, where we would normally in our program turn to the Torah. But today we had a remarkable caller at the end of the first hour that has come to a place of understanding based upon a willingness to question what he had been led to believe, question his prior kind of religious and political affiliations, and to explore the evidence, and then using an open mind and reason to come to conclusions to form an informed understanding as opposed to what most of us go through life with, which is misguided beliefs. Now, before we return to Larry, what I want to do is explain a little bit of my personal path to this. The morning of 9/11, I was flying in an airplane. I was the pilot of that airplane, and was flying Jerry Falwell, the famous Baptist preacher, back from a prophecy conference where he spoke in the state of Texas. And as we were flying back, that was the time of 9/11. Jerry would speak into the evening. I would fly him back into the wee hours of the morning. I was an evangelical Christian. I was part of the moral majority. I was a very conservative Republican. Now, as those who have listened to this program know, I am no longer a Christian. I am no longer a Republican or political at all. But that's what I was at the time of 9/11. And when I had previously spent a better part of a day with George Bush, I had come to know him, and I'd come to realize that George Bush was going to be a disaster for this country before he was elected, and I knew exactly what he was going to use 9/11 to achieve, which was to lash out at a symptom and make our nation infinitely more vulnerable by his invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And I knew he was going to do it, and I wanted to do anything I could to stop it. And I tried to meet with him before he made his speech and got very close to having done so I could persuade him not to go down the course that he followed, which became a disaster for America in our invasion of Afghanistan and Iraq. And so I did the only thing I thought I could do, which was to go personally and meet with Al-Qaeda to find out why they were killing us, to understand, if it was true, how they had corrupted their religion, and to set the record straight, which caused me to take a trip to meet Al-Qaeda. I think I'm the only American to have survived a meeting with Al-Qaeda, and I wrote a book about my experience called Tea with Terrorists. And from there, I began to do radio programs after writing that book, and did thousands of them. I spoke to America thousands of times, typically over the course of an hour on virtually every talk radio show, trying to demonstrate to people that the problem was not terrorism, it was fundamentalist Islam. And that is how Larry first heard of the materials and the research that I was providing. Larry, you still with us?
Yes, I am. Right.
Okay, that brings us up to where we were at the break. With now, the listeners have a little idea as to where I've come from. So you said you were first exposed to these materials because you heard me on a radio show. What was your proclivity? Were you political or religious at all when you first heard this? And what was your first reaction to very judgmental linking fundamentalist Islam with the terrorist deeds that we saw not only on 9/11 but around the world?
Well, at that point, it struck me as accurate, but I wanted to investigate it a little more. And let me point something else out. There was something that you said during that radio show, because you were talking actually to I think it was a Christian radio show, and you had mentioned that steeples had to do with sun worship and that crosses were really an older satanic symbol and so forth like this. And I had walked out of the church some 5 years before and was really in search of the truth. So, And let me go further here too, just to explain. My wife is Iranian, and so I wanted to be able to explain to her why Islam is what it is. And after having read the material several times in Prophet of Doom, there was no question in my mind that Muhammad was. I mean, it was really just a story about a 28-year career of a slave trader.
Yes.
And I exposed Yalda, my wife, to this stuff, and she came to understand that as well.
So for listeners here, can I interrupt?
Got me in. Go ahead.
Can I just interrupt 1 second, because sure. Most listeners probably have no idea what Prophet of Doom is. So I mentioned Tea with Terrorists. Tea with Terrorists is a novelized account of my actual meeting with Al-Qaeda. It explains who the terrorists are, why they kill, and what we can do to stop them. Prophet of Doom is a completely different book. It's 1,000 pages. It is the best documented, most comprehensive, most contextual and chronological presentation of the five oldest Islamic sources ever written. It is what it does is it uses the Ishaq Sirah, which was the first book written about Muhammad, which means biography. So Ishaq's biography of Muhammad, which is a collection of hadiths put in chronological order pertaining to who Muhammad was, what he did and said. I use the Ishaq's Sirah. Tabari's Tariq. Tabari was the first historian in Islam. He was also wrote the most revered Quran commentary. And so Tabari, using hadith, which are oral reports from Muhammad, the Quran itself is hadith, it's an oral report from Muhammad. Tabari put together the history of Islam. It's the second oldest book that exists in terms of the life of Muhammad. And I use those two chronological accounts, one historical, one biographical, to reorder the Quran chronologically. The Quran, for most that don't know, is a jumbled mess. It has no context. It has no chronology. And it barely mentions Muhammad. But yet it focuses all on Muhammad. So I use the Sirah and the Tariq, the history and the biography, to reorder the Quran chronologically. And then I used the two most revered hadith collections of Bukhari and Muslim to fill in the gaps so that readers could now read the Quran in chronological order in the context of Muhammad's life. There is absolutely no better way to understand what the Quran says, what that message is all about, and who Muhammad was than to bring the five oldest and most credible Islamic sources together. That is what Prophet of Doom is. It's free. We're not trying to sell it. In fact, we can't sell it. Don't have any more of them. But it's free in its entirety in HTML and PDF and MP3 at Prophet of Doom. So you gave your wife, who was a Muslim, Prophet of Doom to read. You had read it several times. What was her reaction to it?
Well, her reaction was that it was accurate. You have to understand, I mean, my wife's family was highly Western.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, that makes them, you know,
bad Muslims.
Thankfully, they were very wealthy.
Yes.
But it also makes them somewhat strange in Islam. And so,
yes.
It was pretty easy for her to swallow. She came to understand that Allah was really, you know, Satan,
mm-hmm.
another name
yeah.
for Satan, just like Lord
yes.
is.
Yes.
And it became very easy for her to comprehend once it was all broken down in order. Because, see, again, as you point out, you know, you'll talk to people that'll say, I've read the Quran. I've talked to many of them that tell me this.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, you can't make heads or tails out of the Quran because it isn't written in any chronological order.
You're right.
You know, you have hadiths and everything to go with it, and then you see what's going on. And what's going on is a man trying to use fear. Well, he did use fear. No trying about it. You know, and assassination, murder, rape, any
right.
number of, you know, ungodly practices to advance himself, which is
right.
exactly what we see in all religion.
correct.
You know, I mean, what had happened with me, I'd walked out of churches, you know, 5 years before, but I realized after attending 30 of them looking for anything that might resemble the truth is that they were all set up as a hierarchy. The preacher would always go out and have dinner with the wealthiest people, you know, after his service. Is that not true? I mean, I saw these things over and over and over. So I realized there was something fundamentally wrong with what I said was organized religion. Yeah. Now, by getting into your material and reading yada yada, what I came to understand is that Yahweh hates religion. Either his words are true or men's words are true.
Right. And men's words can't be true because men claim that they are speaking on behalf of him, and yet, just like Paul, Paul claims, I'm speaking on behalf of God. I am God's apostle. I have exclusive rights to the Gentiles, and the message that I am giving is... Yes. And then every one of his letters is a wholesale contradiction of what Yahweh said. So you either have to be ignorant of what Yahweh said, ignorant of what Paul said, or irrational to believe, as most Christians do, that Paul's words are scripture, that they were inspired by God, because they are overtly opposed to God. One of the things that you said there that I want listeners to have an appreciation of, most of the time that someone writes a critical piece on Islam, Prophet Adu is hardly just a piece, it's a 1,000-page tome, because it's I didn't want to be accused of cherry-picking. I put it all in. That they're a Christian and therefore they have a religious agenda against Islam, or that they're Jewish and they're just tired of Muslims picking on them. What you found out, I'm sure, very early on, I'm not Jewish. I'm not a Zionist in the sense of the political nature of Zionism. I am a Zionist in the sense of what the word means. It means a sign along the way. But and I'm not Jewish. I happen to be Sioux Indian and Irish. Not that it matters. But also, I'm not presenting Prophet of Doom from the perspective of a Christian. Because while I was writing Prophet of Doom, I ceased to be a Christian. And the reason that that happened is that Muhammad claims that his God authored the Torah and the Psalms and what he calls the Injil, which is Evangelion, the Gospels, if you will. And what I wanted to show is that that's impossible because the Quran contradicts the Torah in every possible way. The Quran is literally the antithesis of the Torah. Therefore, there is no way that the Quran could have affirmed the Torah. But as I was studying the Torah, I realized that the Torah didn't just contradict Islam. It contradicted my own religion, Christianity. And when you find evidence like that, you either deal with it or you subject yourself to being deluded for the rest of your life.
Why do you think
3-7?
Hello and welcome back to Shattering Myths, where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Larry has been with us for the past two segments of this program. I'm going to continue to have a conversation with Larry. So that listeners know, this is the first time I have ever talked with Larry. It might sound like we are best friends and that we are in a mutual support society. I have never met Larry. I have never talked with Larry before. I have in the break determined that Larry is someone that I've exchanged emails with in the past. But this is the first time we have ever talked. I was unaware of Larry's past. And the reason that I want to continue this conversation with Larry is that what he did is what I hope everyone with an open mind does. Whether you are currently religious or currently political, whether you, in his case, he was married to a Muslim, I think, if I recall correctly, Larry was once engaged in political promotion as well. Wherever you may be, if this conversation that we are having and this show prompts you to question something about your politics, your patriotism, your religion, and you do what Larry did, which is to say, all right, there's something that rings true about that. I want to go and consider the evidence for myself. And, Larry, that's what you did. And the first thing, just want to make this next point, and you tell me if this is accurate for you. When you read Prophet of Doom, was every quote from the Hadith and the Quran documented? In other words, did you have the opportunity to verify whether or not I was reporting the Islamic scriptures accurately?
Oh, absolutely. It was completely accurate.
Did you check the Quran quotations or the Hadith quotations to verify whether or not what I had written was accurate?
Actually, I did for some time, but after checking 30 or 40 or 50 of them out, it's been so long ago. I saw that they were dead on accurate all the way through, and just stopped.
Okay, and by the way, that's what I'm hoping. I mean, I don't want anybody to believe me. I don't want anybody to trust me. I don't want anybody to rely on me. I think that would be a travesty, because I'm a man, and I'm capable of errors, and I tell people for years that I am just an implement and dirty and dented.
Well, I have to say, I don't think you're capable of that many errors.
Well, I've just spent the last 6 months of my life correcting the mistakes in yada yada. And by the way, that brings up a point, because not only do I want people to verify for themselves, and that's why I document every bit of evidence, and we're going to get to yada yada and the evidence and how it's documented there so that you can verify things for yourself and not be dependent on any individual. I just mentioned that I had spent a better part of 6 months editing and correcting a 7-volume book that is called Yada Yada. And the reason is that I made mistakes. There is a tremendous difference between making a mistake and deceiving, lying. Lying is knowing what you're saying is untrue. Christian ministers, Islamic imams, political pundits lie. They know what they're saying is untrue. They say it anyway for personal reasons, for personal gain. Making a mistake is, and this is the essence of learning, is that I was previously a Christian. I was an evangelist. So I believed what I was saying when I was telling people that they should believe like I believed. I found out that I was mistaken. I found out that my religion was unsupportable. I found out that my religion was in direct conflict with God's testimony. God's name is Yahweh. When I found out that I was wrong, the first thing I did is correct what I had previously said. And what you find is, if you're willing to continue to study, if you're willing to invest the time to consider the evidence and be open-minded and rational about it, lots of times you will learn things that require you to correct previous things that you've said that may just be modestly erroneous, or they could be tremendously erroneous. A great example for me is that, having been raised a Christian, it was very difficult for me to completely extricate myself out of Christianity. So I referred to what is called the Christian New Testament for years as the Renewed Covenant. But as I shared in yesterday's program, I have subsequently learned that the covenant has not been renewed. Therefore, there cannot be a renewed covenant. So I had to go back and through all the things that I had written referring to a renewed covenant,
right,
and I had to change the record. So
yeah,
there
you
are.
See that the covenant is renewed in Zechariah when he returns. You are my family.
Correct. Right.
Yahweh,
yeah,
is our,
yeah,
mighty one. It's right there in Zechariah, and we can pinpoint exactly when the covenant is renewed. I understand that. And so basically what's happening here is we have a situation where...
Welcome back to Shattering Myths. Should you wish to call this program, our number is 877-376-45. As we came to the last break, so that just as a word of insight here, whether it had been Larry or I who was just talking merrily along when the commercials began, that was actually a technical glitch. The bumper music that normally you always hear on radio that tells the host or the caller, hey, we're coming up to a commercial break, you better stop what you're saying and for a moment, and we'll pick it up on the other side of the break. The computer forgot to trigger it, which is why we went talking merrily along. Speaking of triggers, however, there is something that is really important to convey that Larry brought up. He was triggered by aspects of Islam to question it. He was triggered by something to question his religion. It happened to be, in his case, the correlation between the steeples and the crosses that are slathered over the church landscape with the sun god religions of old. You need something that triggers you to question your religion. For me, I'm going to share what my trigger was, because anybody that's going to have any hope of forming a relationship with God, and you have to form a relationship with God after you've come to know Him and you've come to embrace the five conditions of the covenant, and only then can you be saved. That to do that, God's first requirement is that you walk away from your country, that you walk away from religion, that which confuses, from Babel. That's the first requirement of the covenant. So you're going to have something that triggers you to do so, which is a significant part of this program. For me, as I was studying Islam, and I wanted to show how the Torah was actually the antithesis of the Quran, which would prove that Allah was lying when he said that his Quran confirmed the Torah. And what I found when I did that is that the Torah also condemned my religion. It proved that my religion, which at the time was Christianity, was false. And in life, when you have an opportunity like that, when you are shown that what you have believed or thought was true is in fact false, it becomes, you reach a point in life where you can either change and accept the evidence and reason and embrace the truth, or you can forever put yourself in a position where you're going to be beguiled by the lie. And the difference between those things is not just an open mind. It is also the requirement that you invest the time. That's what Larry did. He picked up the books. He didn't read them just as you would casually read a book. He began by questioning everything, all of the evidence. And then by studying it and thinking about it and reading them many times through. And that's the opportunity for everyone that is listening to this program. Larry, and one of the comments that you made as we were going to a break is you asked me a question. You said, why is it that religious people don't seem able, and particularly Christians, they don't seem able to see the flaws in their own religion where they're absolutely able to see the flaws if someone points them out in a different religion, in the case of Islam? Wasn't that your question?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
It's my experience, and having received tens of thousands of emails from people who have read the various books that I've written, or that have listened to a variety of shows, is that religious people and very political people are immune to evidence and reason. Because faith is not based on evidence and reason, in fact, because faith and belief fill the void when somebody does not know and does not understand, they choose to be religious. Faith is adverse to evidence and reason. And particularly when evidence and reason are hostile to one's faith, they become extremely allergic to anything somebody says that points out that their religion is errant. Now, we will spend...
I'll give you a perfect example of that in my life.
Great.
I was probably far more involved in Republican politics than I was ever involved in the church. Because mm-hmm. something always seemed amiss to me in the church.
Mm-hmm.
However, I was on the executive committee for Jacksonville, Florida, or Duval County's Republican Party. Mm-hmm. I was actually a chair for Alan Keyes in Iowa, the first time he ran for president. So mm-hmm. I was pretty active in Republican politics.
Okay.
I came to understand, though, that, the CFR really is today's standalone political force in America.
Council on Foreign Relations, which you're talking about, Council on Foreign Relations, which is a kind of a derivative, if you will, of the Roundtable in Great Britain, both of which have kind of a history that would draw back their ideology all the way back to Adam Weishaupt. Is that the organization you're talking about?
Yeah, and it's my understanding that they actually bought the 25 leading newspapers back in 1923, 10 years after the Federal Reserve Board was established.
Yeah,
it was MI5 that helped the Federal Reserve Board bring in the CFR and establish this, and they've controlled the political debate in America ever since. So I came to understand that, you know, and this was rational thinking, that no matter who was the Republican governor of Florida, as an example, or who was the Republican president, or if we had a Republican House, in Washington, government continued to grow and grow and grow. And these men just couldn't find freedom.
Right.
You know, no matter who we voted for and who we had up there. So I came to realize, well, this is true, you know.
Yes.
And at this point, when I see them speak, I honestly just wonder how many are being blackmailed, how many are being threatened, how many are just flat out paid off.
Yeah, you know, we were similar in this regard. I got to know George Bush, King George II, personally before he was president. John McCain, who ended up running against him, I've had to my home. I was active in Republican politics. I was also very active in the Christian Church. And while I knew that there were questions in Christianity, like how in the world could Christmas and Easter, both of which were born and bred in Babylon, they're purely pagan, and they're based upon the Dionysus and Osiris and Bacchus and Tammuz, death and resurrection myths, how in the world could they be the holiest days in a religion that claims to be the antithesis of paganism? How in the world could...
The very day Ashura, which
right.
is also Astarte, Ishtar, it was called
right.
Venus by the Romans,
yes.
is Easter. And that is the day that Yah said he will be happy he never hears ever again.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Now, what happened to me...
would be the antithesis of his statement. Matter of fact, I told atheists, if you really want to read anti-religious material, you ought to read Yahweh's words.
Yes.
Because they're the most anti-religious material I've ever read.
Yes. His Torah, Prophets, and Psalms are fairly evenly divided between... Here's what I'm offering you in terms of this family-oriented relationship, and here's the benefits of this family-oriented relationship, and here's the consequence if you choose human institutions instead. If you choose to corrupt my message and rely on those corruptions, and you choose to rely on your country and on your religion, on your politics, on your military for your freedom, for example, here's the consequence of that. And then he exposes and condemns those who promote religious and political and economic schemes. Now, I want to return to something you said, because there really isn't much difference between religion and politics. And, in fact, even in America today, religion and politics are hugely intertwined. When I left Republican politics, it was because I came to realize that Republican administrations were actually more responsible for deficits than were Democratic administrations. So when I realized that in practice, that Republicans who claimed to be conservatives were driving up our deficits and the size of government faster than were Democrats, then it became obvious to me that the whole thing was a hoax, that it did not matter who you voted for, you were going to get the same thing, and the same thing was leading the country to economic bankruptcy through larger government and deficits and more wealth redistribution plans. And the rhetoric on the Democratic Party and the rhetoric on the Republican Party differed, but not the reality. And then I realized this whole myth of conservatism and liberalism and the Democrats versus the Republicans and these various candidates, that the whole thing was nothing but a myth that was driving us to the destruction of our country.
Exactly. We own them both. You can choose AT&T or Verizon. You can have Burger King or McDonald's. It doesn't matter.
But they're both junk food.
Gotcha either way. It's like asking me if I want hemlock or cyanide.
Correct. One of the things that the next thing I did is once I realized that my political allegiance were completely misguided, that I ought not vote for the lesser of two evils, because actually by voting for the lesser of two evils, I'm getting greater evil. Because in history, economically, it turns out the Republicans have been worse than Democrats. And that's hard to imagine, but it's true. The next issue was, I was hugely pro-military. Boy, I was a flag waver. I was a big supporter of the Vietnam War. And then I came to realize that the Vietnam War was based on a lie. The Gulf of Tonkin incident did not happen. We sacrificed 55,000 American lives and killed millions of Vietnamese and squandered boatloads of money on a lie, making a bad situation worse. Then I did an investigation. I took 6 months to study every war that America had been involved in. And with exception of one theater of one war, every time we engaged in a war, it was based on a lie, and we made the situation worse. And so all of a sudden I'm saying, wait a minute, this notion, this patriotic notion that we ought to support our troops because they're fighting for our freedom and that the freedoms that we have today are attributable to the military, I realized that's not true. Our military has never fought for our freedom.
How do you defend freedom by fertilizing opium fields, as an example, over in Afghanistan?
How do you, if you deliver freedom for America by taking the Muslims, the fundamentalist Muslims in Afghanistan and pushing them into Pakistan, which has nuclear bombs? How do you,
one other question for you, Craig. How do we condemn the bad Al-Qaeda, okay? And yet we work with Al-Qaeda to overthrow Gaddafi. Now,
yes.
How can this possibly be?
Yes, and we worked with Al-Qaeda to overthrow the Soviet control of Afghanistan.
Yes.
So we've made the best enemy that money could possibly buy. On the other side of the break, we'll return to Shattering Myths. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. This will be our final segment today, but I hope you'll join us tomorrow. Our number, should you call, wish to call tomorrow, 877-300-7645. We're going to continue with Larry. The last comment that Larry was making is an important one, which is that how is it that Al-Qaeda can be our enemy when the United States and all reality created Al-Qaeda? History there is extraordinarily clear if you'd wish to study it, but Zbigniew Brzezinski and Jimmy Carter thought that we could give the Soviets in Afghanistan a taste of their own medicine that they gave us in Vietnam, that we could deploy the Taliban through Pakistan, which controlled the Taliban, and that and Al-Qaeda, that we could use Al-Qaeda and the Taliban to give the Soviet Union a bloody nose. And so we funded them to the tune of $5 billion, and we armed them. Had the United States not done that, there would never have been Al-Qaeda. So we created Al-Qaeda to serve our purpose. We knew all about them, and we used them, and now we are at war with them. It's a silly concept. But now the one reason I want everyone to recognize that there is a link between all these things we're talking about. Patriotic deception, militaristic deception, economic deception, and religious deception are all of the same stuff. They all are lying to you because they want to control you, because they want to fleece you. They want you to go along with what they're saying. The last thing they want you to do is to recognize that every one of these things is untrustworthy, not worthy of your soul, not worthy of your allegiance, not worthy of your money, because once you come to recognize that, you are free of them, and once you're free of them, you're free to walk to God and to embrace His covenant. So, Larry, as you began to study, was your conclusion that the political allegiances that you had had in your past were misguided?
Oh, absolutely. What I came to realize is that, and I have to tell you, yada yada had a lot to do with it. It got to a point where I understood that really disingenuous words pontificated by political actors and religious actors are used to create fabricated realities. It's
correct.
The hubris of which politics and religion are made.
You're probably aware of us. You're probably aware of a story that that I think I've probably written in one of my books. You may have read this, but your audience may not have heard this. I shared that I was very close to Jerry Falwell in my past, and that I was a Christian. Once I began to write Yada Yada, and I was maybe 6 months into it, I'd learned a lot, and boy, at that point, my eyes were completely open. I knew that the Christian religion was a complete fraud. It was a counterfeit.
Satanic deception.
Right. So I recognized that, and I was just beginning to learn that. I wrote a 12-page paper that I called Jerry, and I said, I want your best Hebrew scholar. I want your best theologian, because he owned and was the chancellor of Liberty University, a big Christian university. I want the smartest guys you have, and I want you for a four-hour lunch. And I want to go through with you a long analysis of what I have been able to do thus far as it relates to Christianity and what God actually said. And what I'd like to do
is where he told you he believed you, but you would be considered a kook, and he was funding.
We went through 4 hours of what I had learned thus far, which is a 1/1000th of 1% of what I've come to know subsequently. And we went through each point. At the end of it, he said, everything you have said is true. And his scholars nodding their head, everything you've said is true. And it was one attack after another on Christianity. And he was a Christian minister. You know, Christmas, Easter, Sunday worship, the name of Jesus, using Lord to describe God, the Trinity. I went through them all. And he says, everything you've said is true. But if we were to say them, there would be no one sitting in the pews of this church, and there would be no envelopes arriving to support this university. And if you are to say them, they will label you a kook.
Right.
What I'm telling you...
all that, and I see that, and that's what they did to Yahusha.
Correct.
Of course, they disregarded his words. And in fact, they took Yahusha, the diminished form of Yahweh in human form, son of man, because
yes.
He's called all three things upon the return.
Correct.
In Yasha Yahu, mislabeled
right.
Isaiah, he calls him Yahusha.
Correct.
Zachariah calls him Yahweh. Matanyahu, Matthew, calls him the son of man. So
right.
We know that Yahweh is Yahusha, or Yahusha is Yahweh, and of course Yahusha means Yahweh saves, which defines both himself and his mission, where of course Hesus later morphed to Jesus.
Larry, we've got it.
Larry,
we're at the end of our program. I'm glad you called. This is Shattering Myths. We hope that you'll return and join us tomorrow.
I've seen the longevity products work for many others, and so I bought a bunch of them, started using